Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, here's the good news. If you're sick of us this week already, you don't have to put up with us much longer. Happy Wednesday.
Just a couple hours.
Just two more hours, Tony. That's it. And then it's a happy Thanksgiving, hopefully, for everybody out there. A Jaguars Today free Thanksgiving, as we'll be taking the day off tomorrow and Friday, for that matter. You're not sneaking in any 1010XL radio that I don't know about over the next 2 days, are you?
No, I am not. We'll be recording the TV show later today.
Yes, we will.
For CW this weekend. I also am doing on ESPN3 on Friday the UNF women's basketball game against Bethune-Cookman. Brent Martineau usually does that, but he can't make it this week, so he asked me to fill in.
Are you wearing a suit?
I doubt it. But we'll see.
How's that work on television? What's the? I don't know what the dress code is for ESPN3. I don't get ESPN3.
I don't know either.
I wore a shirt and tie last night for the JU game, so no suit is required.
Did you work the ESPN3 game last night?
Oh yeah, me and Artis Gilmore.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, me and Artis.
Tell us these things. We'd be happy to promote them for you on the show that you're a producer.
I apologize for not bringing up the barn burner that was JU and Thomas University.
Well, it's not. I'm sorry. Excuse me. How many times have you done the national broadcast of a basketball game?
I did it all last year.
Did you?
Oh yeah.
Well, see, I don't know these things. I don't have ESPN3. I don't watch this. Why don't you point this out more? I'd be happy to promote that for you, Tyler Devin.
I don't know.
Given to you.
I will make sure I point that out. But I will be on the air Friday. My first opportunity on the air as a host.
You will. Wait. Oh, yeah. So you've been doing national television broadcasts for a year. I mean, you're just finally working your way up to hosting on 1010XL.
Just now working my way up, yeah.
The hierarchy as far as that goes. Well, happy Thanksgiving, Tyler. We are so thankful to have a budding television and apparently radio star as well. Who knew? Producing the program for us on a daily basis.
Well, you're welcome.
There you go. Jags playing in London. Well, we knew that, Tony.
We did.
When and against whom, we did not know, and now we do for next year. Week 4. Ugh. That's an early one. Don't like those early bye weeks. That means a bye in week 5. But they take on the Colts next year in London. And I'm sure that's going to be, in some circles, met with some consternation. Here's the problem. You know, you don't want to lose that Green Bay game, right? You know, Green Bay doesn't come here all the time. You're probably your last chance to see Aaron Rodgers play in Jacksonville, it appears, in his career, you know, because they only make that circuit every 8 years to visit down here. You know, if you got to give up something, and other teams have given up divisional games. I don't like giving up a divisional game over there because of what we talked about with the Irish Jag and Stoffelis Prime when they were in here, Christoph and Stevie last Friday, or Stevie and Christoph as the case may be, last Friday after the Jags win. They had made the trip over from Europe to watch a Jags play, like many Jag fans try to make the trip over to London. But they said it was amazing to be in this stadium at Everbank because it is night and day compared to the fan support in the stadium. Because as we've suspected and as we've seen, Tony, it's more like a Pro Bowl atmosphere over there. It's not like you have just your rabid fan base and you lose some of that home field edge when you're playing over there.
Yeah, look, it doesn't bother me all that much to lose the Indianapolis game, especially if you're thinking is that they're going to lose either the Indianapolis or the Green Bay game here at home. I get the Green Bay game doesn't mean near as much within a season, but it's the opportunity to go watch Aaron Rodgers play, and you don't get that. I mean, it's once every 8 years that those guys in the NFC are going to be here in your building, and, you know, losing that type of game stinks. I wish it was another conference game that they were losing over there as opposed to a divisional game, but if it really came down to Indianapolis or Green Bay, I'm fine with Indianapolis being the game that gets sent over there.
Yeah, I am too if that's the decision, although that doesn't mean it's necessarily the decision just because we think those are two of the more attractive games on the Jaguars' schedule next year. I would have been fine with Oakland at Jacksonville, right? That would have been a good one. Oakland traveling all the way from the West Coast over to London, that would have been fine. We could have done without the Del Rio Jaguar reunion, assuming Jack is there next year, which I have no reason to think he would not be. But the Jags set to face at home next year, in addition to now Tennessee and Houston, obviously, out of the AFC South. They'll face Denver, Oakland, Green Bay, Minnesota, and a yet-to-be-determined opponent out of the AFC North, whichever team, if the Jags finish in first, like we expect them to, and win the division and go all the way to the Super Bowl on a red-hot playoff streak, Tony.
It'd probably be Cincinnati.
It'd probably be Cincinnati, for instance, and on down the line.
Although there is two up now on Pittsburgh, with one left to play against them still. So it could get interesting there in the AFC North, and it didn't look like it would be just a couple weeks ago.
By the way, Ryan O'Howard of the Florida Times Union is playing the role of John Osier today. John Osier likes to pop in while I'm on the air and have a conversation with me, and I can't hear what he's saying. So I'm going to smile and wave at O'Howard, and we hope he's going to join us at some point throughout the broadcast today. And right now would be a fine time if he's available to do that. So I understood that signal. It was one finger, but it was not pointed up, Tony. It was pointed down, like as in, right now, how's that? How's that working out for you? We'll get into it. I saw Ryan among, if not the first, to post that today, that the Jags were going to be playing the Colts. First of all, happy Thanksgiving to you, sir. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm good. I hear you have a loaded second hour.
We do have a loaded second hour today.
My schedule allowed me to get here so I can join you until 11 o'clock.
How about that? We'll have Ryan O'Halloran to kick around for the first hour of the program today. And we do have a lot of stuff coming up today. Jags taking on the Colts, your initial thoughts on losing a division game next year?
Well, it was sort of eventual. I mean, the way you're sort of running out of teams to bring over there. And I mean, this was the next step. And we've asked this for a couple of years, is once you get a routine down, why not bring a division team over there to get a competitive advantage? The Colts obviously had expressed the last couple of years that they wanted to come to London as a road team, but so does everybody else. So, a year ago this time, I would have plopped down $100 saying it was going to be the Packers, because the Packers wanted to go. They're a flagship franchise.
In fact, you speculated on that, and it became
a story,
an item.
speculation became fact in Wisconsin this summer. But I think from the league's perspective, you get a marquee player over there playing the team that you're committed to having there every year. So I think it helps both sides. And, you look at the rest of the schedule, like Redskins, Bengals, and maybe Redskins, Rams, this is clearly the best game.
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah, we haven't even gotten to the other games that are being played over there. Do you think they've built a routine well enough that they have the advantage yet, or are they still in the stages of figuring it out?
I think this routine, the one they used last month, is the best one to use, A, because it worked. But, that first year, I remember they flew over on a Monday, arrived on a Tuesday. I remember talking to guys Friday, and they're saying, thank God we don't got to play today, because there was an adjustment. Granted, they got blown out on Sunday. They had a far inferior team.
Right.
But, the fact that they feel they have a routine down of arrive Friday, walk through game, they think they found their sweet spot, whereas the Colts will probably be calling around saying, okay, what do we do? I bet they go early because they've never been over there before.
They probably will, and hopefully that aspect of it does give the Jags an advantage. Talking with the guys, so I don't know if you heard us saying it, we had a couple of the guys who are Jaguar supporters over from the UK in with us on Friday, and they made the trip over to see the Jags defeat Tennessee. In fact, one of them, Christoph, sticking around for the San Diego game as well. But they both remarked how it was just great to be in this stadium because it's a true home field environment, and London's nowhere close to that yet.
It is, and I'm glad they said that, because just for people who haven't been over there, I'm going to say 75% of the fans in that stadium, they're going to cheer for both teams. If it's a long bomb.
Because they're not fans of either.
Yeah, they just want to see big plays.
Right.
If it's a sack or a big hit or interception, it's a very neutral crowd. What I like about, from a Jags perspective, this coming year is they're the first game there. That means there's going to be it's definitely going to be a sellout, but maybe there'll be a little bit more interest because it would be the first game there in 11 months.
And it's early in the season, right? Yeah. Maybe the Jags are, let's say, 2-1, right? Going into week four, something like that. I know 3-0 is the more realistic outcome, but I'm trying to play Debbie Downer this morning. But let's say they are, you know, they're 2-1, division game. That could be a big early season, you know, kind of statement game potentially for the Jags.
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, at least they're not going over there 0-7, 1-6, 1-5. I mean, you know, if they're 2-1, they definitely got some momentum going over there. But the other thing, when I first saw the date this morning, the two questions I had, okay, are you going to go with a week five bye? I'm told yes, that's what they're going to.
You would assume, yeah.
Request. The reason I asked that is I think this stadium is unavailable for 3 weekends in October with Georgia, Florida set up.
Maryland, Notre Dame.
Navy.
Navy, Notre Dame.
Navy, Notre Dame.
Yeah, the first weekend would be Florida, Georgia setup, and they don't want to play here when they don't have the pools or cabanas. The second week would be Florida, Georgia. The third week would be Navy, Notre Dame. I said, okay, well, does that mean 3 straight on the road in the middle of the season? At least 2 straight I'm hearing. They can play at home a day after Navy, Notre Dame. The field isn't going to be great, but from a competitive standpoint, that was the only question I had is, okay, does this take them on the road again for 3 straight weeks? We saw how well that worked out this year.
And the answer was non-committal?
Non-committal, but it wasn't they're definitely going to be on the road 3 weeks.
It's still up for debate.
You know, definitely the first two, I would assume, because when they played that game against Miami 2 years ago with the end zones unavailable, the vibe from the Jaguars, we're not giving up that revenue again, nor should they.
Right. I hear you. All right, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union is here with us, at least for the first hour of today's program, and hopefully we're going to have a visit from Chef Tim today from Levy Restaurants. Tony, what do you think? Is there going to be some kind of Thanksgiving-themed food that he brings us? What's your guess? I could go for a little
pumpkin
early
pie.
You can have my slice of pumpkin pie if you come. Stick around. That's right as you're getting ready to check out, by the way, so you can just grab a feed bag and go if you want to do that. And Dr. Stephen Lucy with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute will check in with the weekly injury report for the Jags as well. It's Wednesday, and it's brought to you by Metro Rooter here on Jaguars Today. And, you know, certainly we'd like to hear your opinion on the Jags giving up a divisional game, a traditional home game for the London home game over there next year, and what your thoughts are on the Colts not making a visit to Everbank next year. You're certainly welcome to check in with us at 641-1010. And also text us at that number on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. But beyond that, the question of the day just asked you simply with the Thanksgiving holiday coming up tomorrow, what are you most thankful for as a Jaguar fan? What about being a Jaguar fan gives you the most reason to give thanks, whether it's this year specifically or ongoing or whatever? Just answer it any way you see fit. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union on Twitter as well. So hop on board today, 641-1010 on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We'll dig into Jags Colts next year in London. We'll dig into the San Diego Chargers this weekend coming to Everbank. We'll talk about what you're thankful for as a Jags fan or whatever else happens to come up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Did you watch any ball? Send it?
Yeah, I did. I watched my kids play basketball. Does that count?
I guess it can. Doesn't count as NFL ball, but that's all right. Like the rest of us, you probably took your eyes off the National Football League for a few minutes on Sunday, and it sounds like Gus Bradley did exactly that. I don't know if you could have scouted much out of the San Diego Chargers this weekend. Just a bad, bad performance, by far their worst of the year. That's been a team that's been struggling all season, Ryan, but really kind of hitting the skids right now. They've been beat up all season on the offensive line. Their top two receivers are out right now. They've had some key injuries on defense, although they have had Eric Weddle back now for a couple of weeks after he missed a few. How bad is this San Diego team, do you think? Or do you think any team with Phillip Rivers has a puncher's chance on any given week?
I was going to say both. They're a bad team, but they got a shot because of Rivers. Defensively, they give up a ton of big plays in the run and the pass. You know, they had Weddle out. They had Tao out. They don't get a ton of they don't get any pass rush from their defensive line. Their two outside linebackers lead the team in sacks with 4 apiece. On offense, you mentioned the injuries. Rivers is on pace. He leads. He's second in yards, first in attempts, first in completions. So they're going to throw it. 33-3. That was his worst home loss in his career. They've lost six straight. Melvin Gordon can't get anything going in the run game. And in the San Diego paper on Monday, their main columnist, Kevin Acey, said, told Mike McCoy to his face, "You should be out." So that's how things are going in San Diego.
Wow, not too well, I would say. You know, Lagerman said watching it, he thinks the biggest issues with the run game have been the offensive line, mm-hmm. which has really been beat up this year. And DJ Fluker, who had suffered a concussion and was in the concussion protocol last week and got cleared to play against Kansas City, played, I think, 60 snaps. He's back in the concussion protocol this week. I think it's his fourth or fifth in 3 years that he suffered.
And then Dunlap,
King Dunlap.
He didn't finish the game because of an ankle, which at the time they thought was just a straight benching. He gave up two sacks and had a holding penalty. So even if he does play, he's going to be a gimpy and B, not very effective.
Right. So, you know, an opportunity, I think, as we talked about yesterday, Tony, to maybe get after Phillip Rivers with your four down linemen because the offensive line is so bad. And you know, the thing is, Rivers ranks second against the blitz in the National Football League. So if you send guys, that might be the best hope that they have because they're used to having to get rid of the football quickly, regardless of how many guys people are sending against them because the offensive line can't block anybody.
Yeah. I mean, you watched that Kansas City game last week, and what Kansas City does better than they do anything else is get after the passer with that front four. I mean, with Houston and Ali as those outside guys, they can really create some havoc in the pocket, and they did last week. Anytime Rivers had to hold the ball for more than that 2 seconds, somebody was breathing down his neck, and you could see it that there just weren't guys getting open, and it's a bunch of guys that maybe he's not comfortable with there in the passing game yet with the injuries that they've suffered. So you could see that there was no level of consistency there in that passing game last week. Hopefully that carries over for at least one more week, but certainly the Jaguars can't get after a passer, even when they're blitzing the same way that Kansas City can at this point with where those two franchises are.
I mean, you look at, you know, if I'm the Jaguars defense, I have concern because whenever they pressured Rivers last year with an extra guy, crippled them. But look who he threw to. Eddie Royal's not there. Keenan Allen's hurt. Gates isn't done much since he came back.
Yeah, the big game immediately coming back, and then since then has not done much.
Ran out of gas. But
the Jags have been very poor against the tight end recently.
Yeah, those issues have resurfaced.
And I got to believe Gates and Ladarius Green are going to be a big part of this game plan, no matter what they've done in recent weeks for San Diego.
They had four tight ends, including besides the two guys, they had two other tight ends play at least 15 snaps. So they're going to go, I mean, heavy personnel, see if they can get a guy to leak out, because that's been the Jaguar problem with these tight ends. Just they get their eyes caught in the backfield, you know, so they're getting behind them. But one local guy in San Diego is Javonte Herndon, the receiver, played at Bulls. He's playing now because they got nobody left and returning kicks and punts.
Right. Dontrell Inman, I think, is a pretty talented guy, but he's pretty raw. He hasn't played a ton. And, you know, Stevie Johnson's had his moments in the National Football League, so it's not like it's chopped liver, but it's a step down from what they were used to having when that passing game was rolling earlier this year.
Yeah, and so you always look at teams that come off what an embarrassing loss. They usually answer the bell next week because the Jags did when they got blown out by New England. They should have won at Indy. You look at San Diego, cross-country trip, six straight losses, hardly any players left, holiday weekend. Okay, what team is going to show up?
Right.
I mean, if the Jaguars can actually be productive in the first quarter, could they just remove their will right away?
It's possible. You know, you make a good point with the West Coast trip and the holiday weekend and all that. You don't know how much what is their focus on at this point in the season?
Sure.
If it's not maybe just get the season over with.
Look, and we've talked about the problems the Jags have had with Phillip Rivers in Rivers' career. The Jags haven't beaten Rivers since their first matchup with him in 2008. That's when Mojo put that block on Sean Merriman. That's the last time this Jaguars franchise beat Phillip Rivers in the San Diego Chargers. And if you look at his numbers since then, he's 4-0 since then. He averages nearly 320 yards a game. The scary number with Rivers against the Jags, 9.87. That's yards per attempt in games against Jacksonville in his five games in his career. Almost 10 yards an attempt. He's completing over 72% of his passes against Jacksonville in his career. I mean, he has just sliced and diced this Jaguars team. Hopefully it's a very different story this weekend.
When Hayes Carlion is going to write about Rivers tomorrow in the Times Union, he asked Gus yesterday. It was like he asked it without smirking. Last year at this time, they had Winston Guy at free safety.
Right.
And basically Hayes asked Gus, do you feel your defense is more prepared to face this guy? And he was like, well, yeah, you hope. Well, they probably have some better players out there because I don't even think Telvin Smith wasn't even starting at that point. Yeah, maybe just playing some sub package. But, you know, we say, how many times have we said this year, well, if the four-man rush can't get here this week, it never will. Well, this would be probably the biggest week.
Man, I was trying to think if that period of time with Rivers overlapped with the David Boston game. You remember with David Boston?
I do.
Put a number on the Jags. That predated Philip Rivers. Man, that goes back. I'm feeling old, Tony. That goes
that
back.
Breeze?
2003 must have been Breeze, yeah. I'm guessing, at the time. David Boston, as we know, you know, mostly known for playing with Arizona and had steroid suspensions, all kinds of stuff like that. Played 1 year at the Chargers. Came in, Ryan, 14 for .181 and 2 touchdowns against the Jags. He would go on to have one more 100-yard game the entire year, the rest of the season. So they have had their troubles with pass catchers. I think one of the guys that's hurt or helped Rivers and helped that yards per attempt has been Malcolm Floyd. You know, he's been such a deep threat and such a good deep threat. And they had such a chemistry working together, and he's one of the guys that won't be playing for him this week.
Yeah, I mean, he tore his labrum against Chicago. I don't know why he's even on the roster. Because for a receiver, that usually means you're done.
Right.
But
maybe it just goes to show you they don't have much,
don't have
and there's
left,
not much to call up.
Yeah.
The one guy that I've caught a couple of San Diego games this year, and the one guy that stands out every time I watch him is Jason Verrett, the cornerback. Mm. Guy's outstanding. I mean, honestly, you start to talk about, you know, for a while there, it was certainly Revis at the top and Richard Sherman. I think Richard Sherman's still probably among the better guys. Revis is not he's had his ups and downs for sure this year, but guys like Verrett and Darius Slay and some other young players around the National Football League, not household names yet. I'm telling you, Verrett, if he takes Allen Robinson, do not expect a big day for Allen Robinson based on what I've seen out of this guy this year. The guy will get in your hip pocket and he is tough to shake, and he was completely shutting down Alshon Jeffrey on, I think it was a Monday night game a few weeks ago.
It was, yeah.
Right? And then he left, Tony, was it a quad strain or a hamstring, a groin?
Something.
I think it might have been a groin tweak. He was chasing him down the field on a deep route and had to leave the game. And from that point on, Alshon Jeffrey went bananas against that San Diego secondary. But Verrett is basically taking one guy out of the game plan every week.
Yeah, and for that reason, and also for their San Diego's bad run stats, I'd say let's focus on Yeldon this week. I mean, you know, he had 10 days to get over the foot, so he should be back to near full strength. And if I'm this offensive line, they talked about it a little bit yesterday, they're terrible in the run game last week. I mean, there were several times where they could have punched in, and they could have put the game away with a third and one. It was basically like third and a third, and they couldn't get it done. So I think they've been challenged. They're going to be challenged this week by the coaches to say, hey, you know, we're going to run it a lot, start blocking better.
I mean, you look what Spencer Ware was able to do off the bench against them last week for Kansas City. Went for over 100 yards with a couple of scores in relief duty. You can run on this football team. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and they, you know, when they get close, they've tried everything in the goal line. Tyson Alualu as Dontario Poe.
Maybe. did I see Dontario Poe was the heaviest guy to ever score a touchdown in the history of the league?
Yeah, that's what Red Zone said.
Yeah. So whoever's keeping track of those stats, I'm not sure. But
and who knows how much he actually weighs. Like, that's the funny thing about that kind of stat. Whatever he weighed 2.5 months ago or whatever when he got weighed, who knows?
Right.
Who knows?
Who knows if he's one of these guys that has to keep it off or they encourage him to put it on throughout the course of the season as long as you're productive. Let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley meeting with the media yesterday. Jags will take complete day off tomorrow for them, Ryan?
Yes.
Completely out of the building, right?
Yeah.
So they switched up. They did some work on Tuesday, which would be their normal Wednesday. So they're trying to accommodate the players and the staff to have a normal Thanksgiving with their family, which I'm sure will be much appreciated. By the way, I've talked to players over the years, and I don't know how it is in Dallas and Detroit. I've yet to meet a player that said, boy, I'd love for the opportunity to play on Thanksgiving Day. Nobody wants to do it. The ones I've talked to anyway, is that kind of, I mean, it's not been an issue with the Jags, but is that a sentiment you commonly hear when this gets brought up?
If these guys were playing tomorrow, these guys would be excited because they probably hadn't done it before. But, you know, at this time of the year, with a short week,
right, yeah. Thursday game, yeah. you know, you're away from the family, although then you look at the other side of it, you win it. You sit back, you got a 10-day, you know.
I think mostly it's because it's a quick turnaround that guys, you know, Thursday's a little bit tough.
Right. So let's hear from Gus Bradley talking a little bit yesterday. We were talking about getting after Phillip Rivers, and obviously with some Derek Marks out, that means other guys being relied on the defensive line. Logman pointed out some of them he thought played very well this weekend, including Avery Jones, Roy Miller, Jared Odrick, among others. And Gus remarked yesterday about the depth on the defensive line and how much he likes it.
Well, I think, you know, the depth of this, the D-line has been good for us. I appreciate that we played quite a few guys early and had such a rotation. So when the next guy comes in, you know, we don't miss much. But it's always challenging. Run fits are something that each week is a challenge, different style of runs that you see, and it's discipline.
Yeah. Gus Bradley also talking about the guy we were just discussing at length. That's Phillip Rivers and just the problems he's given them in recent history. 4-1 now against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Gus Bradley talked about the quarterback.
The guy is phenomenal. I think what's been impressive with him is that they've had some injuries at the wideout spot, tight end spot, and he still stays the same. Very, very productive. Top offenses in the league. He's playing at a high, high, high level. And regardless who's in there, he makes that offense goes. And I think that, you know, his precision, you know, he commands the whole offense. They go no huddle, and he runs that part of it as well. So he just has complete control of the offense, knows defenses, the looks he's getting, and where to go with the ball.
You know it's not going well for San Diego when Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates get into it on the sideline, right? I mean, those guys are as synonymous as any quarterback and tight end duo have been for a while in the National Football League.
Yeah, I mean, that's Exhibit A of frustration.
Exactly,
boiling
right.
Over.
And I'm not saying it's any big deal or anything like that, but it just shows you how far this season has gone off the rails, because you really haven't seen that, despite the fact that Phillip Rivers is, you know, kind of as chippy a guy as there is in the National Football League. You know, he's some guys get the tag of great competitor. Other guys get the tag of ass.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the dividing line?
He's
I don't know.
Of both. Yeah.
I think, yeah, there's definitely some of the red ass with Phillip Rivers, but he seems to get loved on for his competitive nature. I'm not doubting he's a competitor. Guy tore his ACL and played the next week in a playoff game with the torn ACL when everybody in the world knew he had it, you know, and was a statue in the pocket. So he's a tough guy. He's a competitor and all that. Hope he has a miserable day on Sunday. Somebody brought up, I'm assuming maybe somebody at the TU is going to write a story on A.J. Can, because A.J. Can got brought up. Am I accurate in sussing this out?
Yes.
Is that you? Or
no, it's Vito.
Vito's writing. So Gus was asked to evaluate what he has seen out of his rookie offensive lineman.
He's doing really well. Very aggressive. He's come in very stout. I think he'd probably be a guy that needs to continue to work his technique. But overall, very pleased with his play.
What are his strengths and what's he got to work on?
Well, his aggressiveness. And his, you know, I think you know, he had quite a challenge there for some weeks. And really stood up and held up very well. I think every game that you see him, as far as protections and things, you see an improved knowledge of what's taking place, some of the looks that he's seen. So, you know, I think that's his strength. And then the technique part, you know, to continue to work on that. Does some things very well, but the consistent part of using his technique.
Two-part thing on AJ here, these last couple of games, is from a Jaguars perspective, okay, are they'll be able to make a decision. Okay, is he their left guard in 2016, or is he their right guard in 2016 and Linder flips over? Or
either way,
still a backup.
Right, either way. Is he a starting guard, which would probably signal, I would assume, the end of Beatles' tenure in Jacksonville, if that's the case. You're not going to pay him that kind of money to back up A.J. Can, I would suspect. What do you think, just based on what you've been hearing?
See, I don't think Beatles has been bad. He's not going to be an all-pro. He's probably not even going to be a pro bowler. It's just, okay, I wouldn't rule out Zane being on the roster at the start of the offseason just because you sort of got to protect yourself on Linder's injury.
Sure.
So,
and any other number of injuries that could crop up along the way.
If you feel comfortable at his number as a backup, you could probably, I mean, you'll definitely be able to afford it for another year.
Right.
So, and then, you know, then you know, they'll say they have a three-way competition for two spots. Well, they really don't, because Linder's a starter if he's healthy.
Right.
So you'll let the other two guys battle out in camp if it gets that far.
Yeah, I don't even know if they need to go that far with Linder. I think most people assume Linder would be kind of locked in at that stage.
Finally, one last cut here from Gus Bradley. There's probably a small list of players you can talk about that maybe were playing some inconsistent football at the beginning of the year that have started to stack together some pretty good performances. Cyprian, I think, would be one of those guys on the list. Jokel, maybe a guy that you could put on that list. But possibly at the top of that list right now is Jared Odrick with what he's been able to do in the last month. Gus Bradley was asked about the way he's playing yesterday.
I think he's playing very well. You know, and you look at him as far as his role, what we're asking him to do. And he's done a really good job. I think he's been a big part of with the run game, you know, why we've been better versus the run and more consistent versus the run. So, you know, that was a deal where we felt like we needed that style of player, and he's been a great addition.
It's funny because, Ryan, we've had people call up and say, oh, Odrick's a bum. He's not doing anything, because they don't see sacks, right? Mm-hmm. And while he has had a couple of plays like that recently, you know, again, Logman pointing out on the film that it's occupying those blockers. It's why Telvin Smith is running around free on so many plays, right? I mean, in part because of the play of Jared Odrick. That's just not something that's going to show up in the stat page. And so that position, I think, is quite easily overlooked. Even if the guy's playing well, if he's not putting up the sacks, people can have the wrong impression about his level of play.
Well, I would say that he is playing better against the run than he was early in the year, because early in the season, he didn't look like he had a comfort level with what he was supposed to do. He wasn't getting off blocks, because part of this scheme is, you know, what attracts players to this scheme besides the money is the ability to shoot up the field. And you didn't see a lot of that from him. You're seeing it more now. So it seems like he's rounded out his game.
All right. He is Ryan O'Halloran along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We're live here at EverBank getting ready for the Thanksgiving holiday, and asking you today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, what are you most thankful for as a Jaguar fan? If you want to weigh in on that, if you want to weigh in on your thoughts on the Jags losing a divisional game at EverBank next year, as it was announced this morning that they will play the Colts in London in Wembley Stadium, the only game, at least as announced today. There is another international game the NFL is potentially considering adding. It could come in Mexico City. Could be an additional London game next year. But for now, it just looks like that'll be the one London appearance of the Jacksonville Jaguars next year. And your thoughts on them losing a divisional game to Wembley, you can share your thoughts with us on that at 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Ryan O'Halloran. Back with more Jaguars Today in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
A little off the wall, but for Odrick's sack dance or branches?
I think Odrick's is better.
Why?
Pee Wee Herman. It's just awesome.
Ah, yes. Thanksgiving week. When I can hear myself. My headset repeated back to myself. Oh, there we go. That fixed it. When the questions are pressing, such as Pee Wee Herman dance versus the windmill. Ryan,
what is your guys' favorite?
I wasn't in there for that one.
What are your favorites, guys?
Do
you like the windmill or the Pee Wee Herman?
Well, this week I like the windmill because it ended the game.
Yeah. Honestly, I got no problem with either one of them.
No, I don't really care. But the Pee Wee Herman thing, I guess I just don't know how do you latch on to that as being your thing?
I don't know.
The last time Pee Wee Herman was front and center relevant in the world? Not that, you know, Pee Wee Herman's ever been relevant on a day-to-day basis in your life, but you know what I'm saying. You know what I mean? I mean, when's the last time, since he got caught in the theater, Tony?
Right.
When's the last time
Pee
Wee Herman has been all that relevant? I just don't know where you get that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess right around my age, maybe a little bit younger, it's still a relevant thing. Like, I remember watching Pee Wee Herman as a kid. Maybe you attach to it and it just kind of sticks around.
Maybe. I don't know if I ever, like, you watch him, like, on TV.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever watched him on TV. I've seen, you know, a few of the movies back in, like, the 80s or something like that.
Sure.
Seems like it's been a while. But either way, doesn't matter. The more they do them, the more they're having success getting to the quarterback. So I'm a fan of both of them.
Yeah.
Well, every stupid dance you can come up
keep
with.
Keep dancing.
Keep dancing is right. So Blake just thinks Pee Wee Herman's cool. And there you have it. Sidebar for Sunday with Ryan O'Halloran. All right, let's get to a few more thoughts from Blake Bortles. Yesterday, as we've got Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union here with us, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. And as we mentioned to you at the top of the show, it was announced just a little over an hour ago that the Jags will be hosting the Indianapolis Colts in week 4 of the 2016 season at Wembley Stadium in London. So, you know, we know they are going to play a home game there. It's the first time they played a divisional opponent.
I don't know about you guys on Twitter. I don't see a lot of outrage.
I don't either.
If any.
No, I don't either. You know, we didn't ask that. That wasn't our specific question to reply to, but I haven't seen much of it either. Like you said, it's probably, or maybe it was Tony said, it's kind of inevitable that eventually you're going to lose a divisional game. It's just, you know, for me, you feel like next year you're going to be able to go toe-to-toe with the Colts. I'd hate to come down to a single game if you're unable to. Look, if you win that game, great. But if you take that home field element out, I mean, imagine how good a late December home game against the Colts would be if you're right there with them for the division lead. You know, it'd be absolutely phenomenal. But who knows how good the Colts are going to be next year and if they'll be able to hang with the 14-2 Jaguars. So it'll be kind of tough to say. Will that be one of their two defeats? I don't know, Ryan. I'm not. What am I? A soothsayer? I don't have a crystal ball. I just know they're going 14-2 next year.
It will be good to catch up. When they're over there, it would be good to catch up with new Colts coach Urban Meyer.
Very nice. I did hear like 3 weeks ago that Bama fans are going to get all over me about this. That Nick Saban, Ursay would make a run at Nick Saban. Have you heard that or seen
it? I probably saw the same stuff you did.
Probably did. It's just probably just pure speculation on his part. But, you know, you always wonder, you reach a certain point in college football when, you know, if you're the coach at Alabama, you've won as much as he has. They, I'm sure, expect him to win every single timeout, and life is a merciless living hell anytime they don't win a single game, never mind a national championship. So I would imagine that could wear on you if you're the head coach of the University of Alabama, but I have no idea if Ursay is going to make a run at Saban or not. It would be interesting to see if he could do better. He didn't do terribly in Miami.
No.
Looking back at it, it was just, I think he just wanted more control of the situation, and I'm sure if he were going to make another leap to the National Football League at any point, it would only be under the circumstances where he got total control of all kind of things. But Urban Meyer, I'll guess no on that one. I think Saban's more likely on that
really?
Score. Are you kidding me?
No, I think Urban's definitely in play.
You do?
Yeah. I think Saturday was the beginning of the end.
Really? That quickly? Yeah. I mean, to me, though, Urban...
I think he sees that if he's ever going to give the NFL a shot, he has the quarterback in place. If it doesn't work out, he'll just go to the USC or Notre Dame.
Right, which is a good point. I mean, if the opportunity is there to work with Andrew Luck, I look at Urban Meyer and the way he runs offense in college and say, I ain't going to work in the National Football League, so I don't know if he'd be amenable to overhauling his style or what, but... just give you another reason to hate the Colts. I mean, come on. Who likes Urban Meyer? Kidding me? Let's get to Blake Bortles. Yesterday, talking on his weekly day to speak, typically Wednesday, but everything moved up a little bit this week. And he's talking about Allen Robinson. You know, we were talking earlier this week, Tony and I, Ryan, about the numbers. The numbers dictate that he should be squarely in the Pro Bowl conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Hearns maybe just a little bit on the outside, and that's going to fluctuate week to week, depending on who has a big week. Now, again, Jason Verrett's attention may make this not an Allen Robinson week going up against the Chargers, but Blake talked about what has made Robinson so successful this year.
Being 6'3 and able to jump helps a lot. You know, I think his confidence, I think it's continued to grow. I think he's gotten more confident by the day, by the practice, by the catch. And I think it'll only continue to grow because he has, you know, really the ability and physical tools to do whatever he wants to do. And he's got an unbelievable head on his shoulders, you know, very level-headed and humble for the success he's had.
Look, it's a good problem for the Jaguars to have is all these guys that need the football on a week-to-week basis, and when you compare it to where it was just really 2 years ago, here in Jacksonville, trying to figure out, can anybody catch four balls this week, please? Mm-hmm. Just get open four times within a football game. They don't have that problem anymore, at least not right now. Blake Bortles also speaking to the media yesterday, talking about the real issue they have on offense right now, which is finishing drives in the red zone. And he talked about it, saying it's about the execution when they get to that part of the field.
I think it's just execution. I think we got to continue to, you know, kind of pay attention to the details, you know, which was kind of, you know, what we talked about earlier in the year. So I think continuing to do that. But I mean, I think we've shown the potential. We've shown success in the red zone. So I think we got to be able to find ways to make it consistent.
That's been a big issue, though. You know, punching it in, which was, I thought, well, it was important they were able to get it in on first down. You know, I think that builds on you. You get down there enough times, you keep coming up short, having to settle for field goals. You know, Rashad Green sets you up point blank. Thought it was important. Just, you got almost caught, you know, Tennessee back on their heels a little bit on that first play. Don't give them a chance to dig in. If you're incomplete on that first pass, you wonder if it starts to go, oh, here we go again. You know what I mean?
I mean, they drew it up. I mean, it was drawn up to get the matchup they thought it'd get.
Oh, it was wonderful. Julius Thomas with a defensive end on him.
Yeah, and it's that play and how easy it looked. Okay, go to it again and again.
Let's run that a few more times, or at least once every time you have a set of goal to go downs.
Yeah. One thing about this, on that red zone stuff from last week, is they had the third down. They're going right to left. So it was the Denard red zone possession.
Okay.
And Gus said on Friday that he was going to go for it on fourth down until they lost yards on third down. To me, that's a little malfunction of the junction, because that means Greg Olsen called that third down play thinking he had two shots. Well, if I'm Gus, I'd say, okay, hey, call your best play, then we'll figure it out. Because I know, I've known coaches before that have called that third down play saying, okay, I know I have two shots here, so I'm going to run a bread and butter run play to at least get half the way there. And then you punch it in from there. Well, they lost their edge and they kicked the field goal. So I think there's some, like, maybe a little, they need to get their philosophy straightened out this week, because ultra conservative, weren't aggressive. From a Jaguar perspective, hopefully that last red zone play was a sign of things to come.
Well, yeah, I hope you're right about that. And I know they want to be able to run even when the other team knows it's coming, but they haven't been able to do it. And Denard's not your back. He's not the guy that's going to hammer it in. You know, not the guy you would choose to hammer it in from the 2 yard line. They got caught in a good personnel group and they wanted to play hurry up, and I understand all that. But after you give him those two shots and he gets stuffed on second down, that's enough.
Yeah, I don't like the thing where, well, we got him caught in a wrong personnel group. You know, dictate to what you guys want to do. If you guys have a great play in mind, it should matter who they have on the field. So it's almost like you're that close. Settle down a little bit. You take advantage of the wrong personnel when you're between the 20s. I'm almost like, okay, it's so valuable a chance that close to the goal line. Make sure you got the right thing going.
Yeah, but if you feel like you get the matchup, and I mean, they ran for 5 yards on first down, so I can understand why they felt like they had the advantage in that circumstance. So I don't have a problem with them going right back to it. But when it didn't work, all right, you know, this is not, again, if you're going to choose, hey, guys, we got a 3rd and 2. What are we going to do? Well, you're not going to put Denard Robinson in and try to power it between the tackles. That's not going to be your option. You're going to go with TJ Yeldon more often than not, or some other kind of play call, you would think. So, all right, moving off of that, we'll get back to Blake a little bit later. Let's get a phone call in before we break here. Steve on the north side wants to weigh in. Our question of the day: why are you thankful to be a Jaguar fan, or what makes you the most thankful about being a Jaguar fan? What's up, Steve? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, buddy. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
Same to you.
Isn't it awesome, man, having great things to talk about with the Jaguars for a change? But what I'm thankful for is Thanksgiving, turn on the TV on ESPN or whatever, and seeing our logo, our picture in the playoff hunt. That is just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little far down there, but it's still in there, right? And that's the thing. Here we are, Thanksgiving weekend, getting ready to roll into the month of December, and there's legitimate talk about the Jaguars, at least in their own division, competing for a division title this year. I know they're not that far out of the wild card, but I don't think it's all that realistic with as many teams as are in the mix as far as that goes. But Ryan, I mean, Tony and I, we tried to avoid it last year to a degree, but in many recent years by now, we'd be hip deep in the mock drafts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, Dane Brugler put one out yesterday, by the way, and took some offensive linemen for the Jags. They're picking outside the top 10. I was like, whoa,
yeah.
I'm not used to that.
I mean, if you're hip deep, last year we were neck deep because we were running graphic every Monday, road to the top pick.
Road to the top pick.
You know, so I mean, that's...
It's not even a thought right now.
No, no. I mean, now it's like if you win one or two more games, you may not be in the top 15.
Right. So don't worry about your draft selection. Yeah. And, I mean, you didn't get anything out of your first-round pick this year anyway.
And I think what this, you know, judging by what Dave Caldwell operates, if you let's look ahead a little bit. Let's say you are drafting 16th. Definitely trading down. Because he looks at an opportunity to get an extra second, an extra third, because he feels they already have Fowler as a bonus.
Right.
So, I mean, when you move into that, when you're in that 13-18 range, a lot more teams are calling you.
All right. Here's Ron O'Hara of the Florida Times Union. You getting out of here? What are you doing?
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Happy Thanksgiving.
What time is the pie going to be here?
I don't know if it's pie, but it should. If it's coming, it'll be here in about 6 minutes. So you're welcome to hang around and hover in the background if you so choose. But regardless, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you Sunday.
To you guys as well. Thank you.
All right. There he goes. Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union on Twitter, simply at Ryan O'Halloran. He is going to scope out the premises and see if we get some kind of Thanksgiving food coming our way. I don't even know if we're getting food today, Tony. Never mind Thanksgiving food.
No idea. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a mystery. Box that we've got going here on Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We will come back with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, November 25th, 1976, Orenthal James Simpson, OJ, became the NFL's single-game leading rusher at the time with an NFL record 273 yards as the Bills took on Detroit. However, the Lions would win that game 27-14. You run for 273, and you could only amass 14 points, and you lose going away in that contest. 296, the mark right now. Adrian Peterson holds the single-game record. Birthdays on this date, some very significant ones on this date, Tony, including Lenny Moore, a longtime fullback, halfback for the Baltimore Colts, seven-time Pro Bowler, five-time first-team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1975. As far as I can gather, on the internet, Lenny Moore still going strong at the age of 82. So happy birthday to Lenny. Happy birthday to Bernie Kosar, who turns 52 years old today. He made one Pro Bowl. He, of course, the quarterback of the Miami Hurricanes' first national championship team back in the 1983 season. Chris Carter is an NFL Hall of Famer. He was born on this date exactly 50 years ago in 1965. Eight-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro, and he went into the Hall in 2013. Donovan McNabb is behind bars, as far as I can tell right now, for his DUI, but he is a six-time Pro Bowler as well. Doubtful Donovan McNabb ever graces the halls of Canton, as he was a good but couldn't quite get over the championship hump quarterback. Took the Eagles to four consecutive NFC title games, and happy birthday to the albino tiger.
Hey!
24 years young today, Marquise Lee, born on this date in 1991. This date in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry right here in town on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, if you're in the market for a family dentist, you can't do better than Dr. McCall's office. 620-9225, a certified Invisalign provider. They offer a 10% discount on all first-time customer initial visits. Check out their full list of comprehensive care services by visiting JamesJMcCall.com. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Denver Broncos announced on Monday that Brock Osweiler would be the starting quarterback this Sunday against the 10-0 New England Patriots. The team is now saying that Brock will start at least the next 2 weeks as they try to get Peyton Manning time to recover from his multitude of injuries. It could extend beyond that. Hope that Marshawn Lynch owners in fantasy handcuffed Thomas Rawls to him weeks ago. The Seahawks have said that Lynch will need a couple weeks to recover from an abdominal injury, which he will have a sports hernia surgery for today. Rawls filled in last week for an inactive Lynch to the tune of 200-plus yards rushing and a touchdown on the ground and added one through the air. And in a horrible story, St. Louis Rams wide receiver Stedman Bailey was a victim in a drive-by shooting last night. In Miami Gardens, Florida, Bailey and four others, including two minors, and were sitting in their car in a residential neighborhood when another car pulled up next to them and opened fire into the vehicle. They were able to drive themselves to an area hospital. Bailey is in critical but stable condition, according to the Miami Gardens Police Department. But just an awful story.
Oh, it's terrible. And the guy, who was it a relative or a friend in the car, got shot many, many times, but he's using his body to shield kids that were in the car. So, look, I don't know what precipitated the shooting, the guy acted heroically, at least in the moment. I don't know, I don't know if he's into some kind of shady dealings or whatever, but, wish the best for the victims there and see where they can, whether or not they can recover. It sounds like Stedman Bailey will recover, at least, physically, whether or not he recovers well enough to play NFL football again, maybe another story.
They said at least two times shot in the head.
Right.
Bailey. So,
hell of a story to tell if you do survive that one.
It's unreal.
You feel what this is? Yeah, that's the bullet mark right there. And here's the other one that I got when I got shot in the head twice and lived to tell the tale of it. Congrats to Big Bo, by the way. 25 semifinalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. I don't think he'll get in on the first go-round, but we talked to Vito Stellino when we had him in on Jaguars Today, Tony, and he was a staunch supporter of his candidacy and, made it kind of his mission to educate the rest of the voters on just, why Tony Boselli deserves consideration. And I keep bringing up Dwight Stevenson's name because one of the biggest knocks about Tony is the longevity of his career. Tony started more games on the offensive line that Dwight Stevenson did, who's been a Hall of Famer for years and years and years. And we're not talking about Dwight Stevenson played in the 40s. He played in like the 80s and 90s. So this is not, it's not a generational gap between these two. Football was different. I mean, the guy started, I want to say Tony started in the low 90s in terms of the amount of games. And I believe Dwight Stevenson started 87 games in the NFL. And nobody questions his Hall of Fame legitimacy.
Look, it's a massive step forward for Tony Boselli becoming the first Jaguars player to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Because now when you get down to 25, now you're going to get all those guys in a room. You're going to get all the writers in the room. You're going to get all those voters in there. And somebody's going to stand up and stump for Tony Boselli. And that'll be the first time that that has happened during his candidacy for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Someone's going to be able to stand up and talk about why Tony Boselli deserves to be there. And for some of the voters who maybe haven't been paying attention to his candidacy here recently, they're going to have to hear the case for Big Bo, and it's a solid case for Tony Boselli to be a member of the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure that it happens in 2016, but I think the fact that he's on the 25 now, it's going to happen. At some point, Tony Boselli is going to be a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
You have to capitalize on the momentum, though. We've seen guys make it to the finalists and then not get enough and kind of fade back a little bit. So you've got, I'd like to see it sometime in the next 5 years, Tony. And I'm sure, Tony and his backers would like to see it immediately, and that would be fantastic as well. I just think realistically, like you said, it's a process. You get to this stage, you get more acclaim. Hopefully in the next few years coming up, you'll make it into the finalist group. And once you do, if you just evaluate him as a player, there's no question he's a Hall of Fame talent. I mean, five-time Pro Bowler in six seasons. If he played three more years, nobody would question. He'd probably already be in the Hall of Fame if he played just three more years. And, look, injuries, man, it happens. And I get it. Longevity is part of the discussion as well, but so is peak performance. And I don't think anybody questions where Tony ranked among offensive tackles during his tenure in the National Football
League. And I'm sure the year that happens at the Jaguars, since they haven't played in it since that inaugural season, will be probably in that Hall of Fame game, would be my guess that year, because they try to honor it with what fans that are coming from whoever's getting in, and with the Jags having been in that game for that long.
In a long time.
It'd be fun to go up there and make the trip. The Canton for one of those.
That would be fun. On the one hand, you'd be like, five preseason games. Boy, that's exciting because no one will play in that game, by the way.
Oh, no.
Whoever,
it's an awful, awful game.
Whoever your backup quarterback is at that point in time, enjoy three quarters of work, okay? And then we'll hand it over to the practice squad guy after that. It's kind of how that Hall of Fame game goes. But Tony, by the way, is working on the Westwood One broadcast of Chargers or not Chargers, excuse me, Packers-Bears.
Yes.
The Thursday night game. I know he was on this morning with Dan and Jeff. You could probably get that on 1010XL.com on the on-demand section. You could probably listen back to that. They talked about
it's a cool Thursday night there.
Phenomenal. It's going to be awesome. Brett Favre going into the Packers Ring of Honor, and Bart Starr's going to be on hand. You're going to have Bart Starr, Favre. You're going to have Rodgers there. I mean, probably ultimately three Hall of Fame quarterbacks. So Tony's going to be on the call of that game in part. I'm going to actually do the national post game for NFL Radio after that. So if you want to check me out on Channel 88 at midnight after you've had a full day of turkey and football from midnight to 2 a.m., and Tony's been kind enough to agree to join me on the program to talk about, primarily to talk about the Packers-Bears game, I'm sure a little bit of his candidacy as well for the Hall of Fame. So very cool for Jacksonville to get recognized a little bit more on the national landscape as far as that goes.
And really, it's the first time Bo has even acknowledged it. Like, when he gets announced on that list of 125, he's like, that's nice. He's like, I don't want to talk about it. That's always how Boselli has handled it, and this is the first time he's made that 25, and he's talking about it a little bit for the first time because it feels real.
It's closer.
Right,
yeah,
it gets to this point.
At 25 guys, you know, you're starting to really whittle it down to the cream of the crop. And what I'd love, Tony, just make it to the finalists and come spend the week out in wherever the Super Bowl's held. You know, all the finalists always make the rounds of Radio Row.
Come hang out, buddy.
And for once, you would hope we'd have an in with one of the Hall of Fame finalists instead of saying, hey, we'd love to get Mr. Elway to come over to our table right now. I realize he's only doing Denver, but could you possibly? No, never mind. All right, we'll ask never again. And so at least we'd have Big Bo to show off to the folks. Super Bowl 50 coming up in Santa Clara.
I know.
I don't know what kind of shenanigans we're going to get into there, but the credential requests have already been submitted.
Sweet.
So
hopefully we get two. We usually only get the one for the game.
For the game, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully we get two, because I think usually it's like, do you want to go to the game?
I'm going to Super Bowl 50,
yeah,
brother.
Super Bowl 50 if I can go.
And Bruno is back for the halftime show, and he was freaking outstanding a couple of years ago when Denver played Seattle up in MetLife.
Hey,
All right.
Maybe everybody will be there from Jacksonville.
Maybe.
That's high hopes.
That's right. We'll all be there. We're going to need a lot of credentials as we make this unlikely to some playoff run and Super Bowl run this year. It's still all out in front of you, Jaguars. Go get it done. We'll talk with the senior writer, who I'm sure would be on hand if that were the case, from Jaguars.com, Mr. Johnny O. We'll stop in a little pre-Thanksgiving tete-a-tete, and we still got your weekly injury report with Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute coming up. Wednesday's brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs, in-home, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter is the call to make. They've got the solution because they have the right people with the right equipment serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area since 1978. Same day service, weekends included. I trust these folks to come to my house when I've got a plumbing issue, and they solve it immediately. MetroRooter.com is the website. The phone number is 695-1911. 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Back with more in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, it's time for Oh Boy with Oh No's. You like something different?
As we talked about over the break, why not? Oh Yeah.
We were deep into it over the break.
Oh Yeah.
He mentioned it literally seconds before we came out of the break.
Let's talk about it.
But good discussion.
Instead of Oh No, which is a negative.
Oh, yeah.
Oh Yeah.
Oh Yeah.
But
Oh No's is not Oh No.
Well, I think
you
some
know
people,
some
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
very
no
little.
Stuff.
So, oh, yeah. Let's
oh,
go.
Yeah.
Oh,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here's Johnny O, senior writer for Jaguars.com. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Absolutely.
Day early. I don't think we discussed this week. What's your favorite Thanksgiving side? We've been asking everybody this week.
Not the red stuff. Is that the cranberry sauce?
That would be the cranberry sauce. I don't eat the cranberry sauce
thing.
Either. My kid will eat. I mean, Heather's going to Costco today. I hope she goes, what do you want at Costco? I should have mentioned cranberry sauce. That kid will
eat. Is that his thing?
You could just put like three cans of it, you know, because it maintains the shape of the can,
right,
and that's half the fun of eating it. But you could just put three cans, open them up, plop them on his plate. He'd be good. That'd be his meal right there.
My wife makes a squash casserole that, believe it or not, is outstanding, and it sounds...
Why wouldn't I believe it? Because it's squash or because your wife made it?
Well, because it's squash.
I like squash.
Yeah, I do too. It's very good. But stuffing well made.
Yes, good stuffing.
Well, right. Now, bad stuffing is, you know... But
bad anything is not good.
But if stuffing is really, really good... It's probably my favorite side.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I'm thankful we all have a plan to have a big party.
Worse than bready, dry stuffing. You know, you're at really bad.
Yeah. My mom used to make, she'd make pork stuffing and stuff it in the turkey. So it was like, kind of like, I don't know, ghetto turducken. It wasn't really, you know, it's like what we had. It was like turkey pig slash, but it was the best. It was oh my goodness, absolutely phenomenal. And my wife doesn't even try to replicate that one.
Didn't bother.
That is some recipes
sure.
You know, that are left to mom.
That's
you know,
fair.
That's just the way it goes.
That's fair.
Johnny, we got a ball game coming up this weekend, and I think a lot of people are very keen on the Jaguars' chances. I mean, nationally,
yeah.
Not that matters when they kick it off. A lot of people have, you know, doubted the Jags in the past when they've won and vice versa. So that doesn't matter. But it is interesting to see the mm-hmm. perception of the team started to climb just a little bit. And the fact that San Diego has been – it was flat out miserable this year, and coming off their worst beating at home in the Philip Rivers era, and as Ryan O'Howard,
2002 or 2003, I mean, it's been a long time.
Oh, it's terrible. And Ryan O'Howard pointed out, good points. A, you know, you're making the first of all, you're out of it if you're San Diego. You're making that long trip, and it's the holiday week as well. All these things. How into this game are the Chargers going to be? I don't think you count on that, but I think it could be a factor.
Well, and I heard him saying that, and he's right. You know, a team in that situation goes one of two ways. Either they come out just absolutely ready to show that they're not that, or they figure, okay, that's what we are, whatever. You know, and if a team's taking the second approach, then you can, if you get up on them early, you can usually take their life out of them. So are the Jaguars a team that can do that to a team? You know, I think definitely if they had the kind of start, not the Buffalo start, because you're not going to have that sort of run, but if they get up, I think they could put the Chargers out of the game. I'm never one to say that one game in the NFL proves what you are, because you've seen enough. Things can happen where you lose weird games. But, you know, I think the Jaguars, if they're improving the way that I believe they are, which is figuring out ways to win at the end of the games, getting better, getting a little more consistent, then this should be a game that they... I hold my breath saying this because I don't believe they're a team that can pull away a whole lot, but this would seem to be a game where you could get enough plays in your favor to perhaps not be hanging on the edge at the end. I don't think it's going to happen very often, but with this sort of setup, with San Diego being as injured as they are, if you get up on them, it's hard to see where they're going to get the offense to get back.
Yeah, as Tony pointed out earlier, not many teams can replicate what Kansas City can do in the pass rush department with Justin Houston and Tom Bahaly in particular.
And they might be getting really good right now.
They're red hot right now.
So,
some people think they're going to overtake Denver and win out and win that division.
Which could be right.
Yeah, which is how well they've been playing. But... the offensive line has been an issue in a big way for San Diego all season long. Even when these guys have been active, they've been in less than 100% in and out of games. DJ Fluker just went back in the concussion protocol, so a good chance he doesn't play this week. And while the Jags are not, you know, loaded with individual pass rush talent, maybe at least in that department, if you could battle San Diego to a draw, that's a, you know, a win for the Jags.
Well, I think the real good thing is that you would seem to be a very favorable matchup in terms of the Jags stopping the run. And that's what they do first. If you can shut this run down, Melvin Gordon is a good back but hasn't been productive because of the offensive line. Nothing that's happened so far for either team this season makes you think that that won't happen. And that's really the key for the Jaguars to get any sort of a pass rush. They have to know that they can do it. They have to not have to worry too much about the run.
Couple of other things off the game this weekend. From Albert Breer, he tweeted out, per a source, the NFL is well along in the process of getting a game in Mexico City next year. They're trying to solve a logistics issue, and if they fix it, they'll play a mid-November game, which will be added to the slate of the three London games that were announced this morning. There's been talk that if they don't get it worked out, there could be a fourth London game added. It doesn't appear any team is playing two games in London this year. But
it could be Washington, based on the reports, because the St. Louis NFC East thing, it could wind up being Washington twice. If they decide, because they haven't announced who that opponent is.
Okay,
be.
I gotcha. It's St. Louis versus a to be named NFC East team on the 23rd of October.
Yeah.
And then the Bengals play Washington the following week. So in theory, which would kind of, quite frankly, kind of tick me off. You know, I think it'd be a major advantage if you're the team that is acclimating yourself to playing in London to be able to play a road game there, which would be kind of tantamount to, you know, a semi-home game for the Jags.
I don't necessarily I don't mind going to London. I don't necessarily want to spend 10 or 11 days away from the family. But I think that would be something that would be good for the Jaguars to do at some point.
Right, for the Jaguars, I think it would be great. It'd be, logistically, it would bring up a whole bunch of other issues. But
it would be very interesting to see if that, and I'm not saying a second home game. I'm saying a road.
Home and a road, right.
I think that would be a really good thing if you did it and you figured out, okay, this makes it feel more doable. This is a good stretch. This is two games. I wouldn't mind seeing that as a regular thing because I can't believe that it would not help that second week. I just can't believe that it would not be easier that second week than the first.
I would absolutely think it would. Right. And whether the first one was the technical home game, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. It wouldn't matter to be able to play back-to-back there. Now, just your thoughts overall on losing, you know, what is on paper probably the marquee divisional game you would have at home next year.
It's a tough emotional thing, and I've been answering some ozone questions for tomorrow, you know, just sort of looking at some of the emails. And I understand their fans are upset about it. You're losing a game that you are used to seeing. You like having the Colts here. You like being angry at them. You like making fun of Luck's beard if you're on the front row. All of that stuff, I understand. The reality for this franchise is London, one game a year at home, is the way this thing has to work. So this is, for those fans who don't like it, it's sort of a necessary evil. And, you know, I think most people listening understand why it's necessary. Financially, the local revenue, all that stuff that we don't have really time to get into the details of it. It's necessary for this team's financial viability. So it has to happen, but I do understand why it's a tough ask because it's a rivalry game. It's one people look forward to. So
right. That, I don't,
just the nature of the world we live in right
I
now.
I think everybody understands whether they choose to accept it or not, but they understand that financially they need to play a game over there. But the question would be, does it have to be a divisional game over there? And, you know, you could argue the merits on both sides in just terms of an attractiveness of the schedule standpoint.
Yeah.
I want to see Aaron Rodgers come to Jacksonville, right? I want to see Adrian Peterson come to Jacksonville next year. Those are two of the opponents that are going to come here next year.
Yeah, see, I'm in the minority on that. I never really, you know, I'm always amazed with fans who are so passionate about who they're playing where. Because to me, when I was cheering for my team when I was a kid, I wanted to see my team. I didn't care if they were playing whoever. But I understand that there are fans who very passionately want to see Aaron Rodgers in this building. So
right,
I don't
they want
to
the
it,
Jags to win the game, but they, you know, that's part of the NFL experience. Is hey, we only get these guys, you know, once every 8 years. I think there are a lot of, and let's be honest, there are people that buy Jaguar tickets that aren't.
Sure.
There are more NFL fans.
I get all that.
And
I'm just saying from my perspective,
I gotcha.
When I was a kid, the Redskins could have been playing, you know, the Bengals every week. I wanted to see the Redskins go win.
I think
I didn't care who was on the other side.
And I granted, I
wanted to hate Roger Staubach. But
the bottom
that,
line, I think
I
everybody
good.
Wants the Jags to win, and if they can win, it doesn't matter all that much. But I think part of it is when you look at, all right, let's, when the schedule comes out every year,
yeah,
even though you know the opponents, it's still fun to say, oh,
sure,
okay, so-and-so is coming in this week, and oh, we're going to get Jack Del Rio bringing the Oakland Raiders in next year, whatever, you know, kind of things. The other issue, not an issue, but a story that's out, is Tony Boselli making the semifinal list for the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the first time, the final 25. Tony and I don't expect it to happen for him this year. That would be pretty, you know, quick ascension, but
do you think
this is, makes it inevitable?
Yeah, and at, as much as I joke with Tony, with listeners about Tony, he absolutely, to me, is a Hall of Famer and deserves this, and it's long overdue. He should have been a semifinalist as soon as he was eligible. If players such as Terrell Davis and anybody who's had the short career has been considered, he was, if not the best, certainly one of the best left tackles in the golden age of left tackles. Maybe Walter Jones and Munoz were better. I don't know if anybody who watches it could say was markedly better than Tony Boselli. All that said, it'd be shocking if he got in this year because he hasn't been a semifinalist yet. So this gets him into the conversation. This gets him where, when Hall of Fame voters who take the job very seriously for whatever flaws there are in the system, when they start talking about it, now they will talk about Boselli. Now they will go back and look and see, oh, he's on the All-90s team. He's the only guy on the All-90s team offense who isn't in. I think that stat's right. When you start looking at all of his merits, especially if they vote Terrell Davis in this year, all of a sudden, Tony's merits, which are 5 Pro Bowls, all 90s, 3 All-Pro selections in that short period, he was great every game that he played and was at a high level every game that he played. So I think as now that he's in the room, now that he's in the conversation, these guys are talking about it, I think his merits will gradually start getting him closer and closer. It could be a 4 or 5 year process.
You're right, yeah, absolutely.
And that would be too bad for Tony, who deserves to be in right now. But I think I think for him, he understands the process. He's a smart guy. He understands that being in the room first and having people nationally who care about this a great deal start talking about it, start debating it, the more you debate it, the better it is for Tony.
Yeah, and look, he may deserve to be in, but there are probably a lot of guys that feel that they deserve to be in right now, and they only accept X amount every single year. It's a very small number.
And the way the process works, and you could do a whole show on the good or bad of the process, what it should be. But the way this process works right now is there are guys who are already sort of mentally in line in the voter's mind of, okay, and I was using, for example, Marvin Harrison has been on there 3 times. My understanding is he has a good chance to get in this year because there are voters who felt like he should have got in last year. So that's sort of how it works.
And if he doesn't, he might shoot you.
Well, yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah, it's always a thing.
I just had to bring that up.
But guys like that, once you get in that rotation, if you will, you're in there, then all of a sudden there will be more and more voters who say, you know what, this needs to be Tony's year. You know what, this needs, and hopefully for his sake, because he deserves it, that'll be how it plays out. More and more people will start talking about him. And again, I keep saying this, it's good for him to be in the debate because the more you look at what he did, the fewer arguments there are to keep him out.
And I think his peers respect him at that kind of level, too. I know Anthony Munoz, who we have the opportunity to talk to at the Super Bowl, says that he's the best that he watched.
Yep.
Right? And that's the best of all time, saying that Tony Boselli is the best that I've ever watched.
Yep.
They do have that USC thing going.
No, they do. And he tweeted out again last night when he saw Bo was going to be among the 25 finalists. He was like, congrats to Bo. He's finally getting to this kind of level.
I can remember talking to Munoz in 98-99 out here in the bowels of Everbank. And he was sitting there. He was in town for TV. He was doing TV at the time. I said, hey, can I talk to you about Boselli? He goes, yeah, as long as you want. I mean, and you could tell it wasn't a USC thing. It was a left tackle thing of a guy seeing a guy who, you know, Tony was put on this earth to be a left tackle, physically, mentally, everything. He was the prototype. He was as good as there ever was. I would maybe say Walter Jones and Munoz were better, but these guys, Pace, Ogden, all these guys, certainly deserve to get in. Tony is as in that group as you could possibly be, and I think he's better than those guys.
Second only to his prowess as an offensive tackle is his prowess as a commercial endorser.
Well, I was going to say
the smoothness with which he reads a commercial spot is unparalleled.
Yeah, Rosenblum, two locations.
I mean, yeah, Culligan, you name it. Yeah. Behind the scenes, Tony is pros pro.
If you bring the voracious appetite into the equation, he's a dead solid lock.
There you
Take
go.
Take it from me, right. Tony Baselli.
That's right. All right, Ozone.
Let's hope it happens.
You doing a mailbag, doing an Ozone even on Thanksgiving Day?
Oh, yeah.
He never rests, ladies and gentlemen.
You think you're talking to an amateur over here?
Every day? Don't worry. Yeah. It's already written, okay?
I should have answered,
to go up.
It's every day until they win a ring, right, John?
Sure, why not?
We'll see you Sunday, man.
All right, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving. John Osier from Jaguars.com, the senior writer, at John Osier on Twitter. That's pretty simple to figure out. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony coming back. We've got Dr. Stephen Lucy with the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute injury report, and also we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you what are you most thankful for being a Jaguar fan, if that makes sense, if I worded that correctly. We'll do that next on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010 XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, our very next guest here at the Metro Diner Chat Counter would be none other than Dr. Stephen Lucy of the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute with your weekly look at the injury report. Happy Thanksgiving, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Thanksgiving to you and all the listeners.
Favorite side dish for Thanksgiving, what you got?
You know, I still am sort of a dressing and gravy guy, but I like mashed potatoes.
Who doesn't like mashed potatoes, man?
Know.
And they got to be real ones, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I like the real mashed potatoes. I can tolerate the sweet potato deal, but I'm still a mashed potato.
I don't want Jell-O with mayonnaise?
No, I don't want
that. The Washington Post is pushing right now?
No, thank you. I don't know how you got on that.
Thank you, Twitter.
Somebody said Google Merlotin casserole.
Oh, it looked good.
It does look good. We did Google it. Shrimp and Merlotin casserole. That looks delicious. There are lots of good things. And by the way, I don't know why this is. Mike Borkwin at Kayak Fish said, well, in the South, it's dressing. I get that. All right. We call it stuffing up north. I come from a pilgrim state up there.
Okay.
I don't know. Connecticut's really a pilgrim state. But he said, are you packing it inside the turkey's body cavity? Hopefully not. Don't tell me there's some kind of bacterial issue. I don't care. I've been eating it that way since, I don't know, ever since I've been eating it, Tony. And
Doesn't sound bad.
Maybe I'll keel over from that one day soon. I don't know. Doc, you know any issues why I shouldn't be throwing my stuffing inside the turkey?
I'm with you. I've been eating it that way for 40 years.
Stuff the bird, Doc, and sew it up and cook it until the outside is just nice and crispy. All right, let's talk injuries. Fortunately, not many for the Jags. We know Zane Beatles went into the concussion protocol, but you think he's looking good on track to play this week?
I think he is. I think we should expect him to see unless there's some kind of setback.
Good. And then, you know, mostly it looks like a mostly healthy bunch for the Jacksonville Jaguars, other than the guys we know are out for the season on IR.
Right. We've still got a few hamstring, groin pulls, those types of things that we're struggling with. I'm sure there's going to be a couple of guys that aren't going to be able to answer the bell with those, but that's kind of week to week. There's always going to be something going on like that.
Let's talk about this Case Keenum deal out in St. Louis, okay? He comes in to play quarterback for the Rams last week, appears to be, to us, the observer, to be staggered on the field. He can't stand up. Certainly looked like he took a blow to the head. Yet he was able to continue to play, and he ultimately turned the ball over. Baltimore recovered and was able to drive down and win the football game. The outcome notwithstanding, the Rams have come under a lot of fire for not getting him out of the game quicker and recognizing that he may have a concussion. There's an independent neurologist on hand at every game. Is that correct?
Yes, there is. In addition to the team's trainer and physicians, there are athletic trainers up in the press box spotting in case, and they're specifically looking for that, and they're independent neurology experts on both sidelines to help evaluate these people. So, you know, on the surface, is how does this happen? And it's gotten tremendous press, New York Times, USA Today. I saw it for the first time on the Today Show on Monday morning, for gosh sakes, with Natalie Morales. So it's all over, but like everything else, it's never as simple as it seems. And, you know, the medical personnel are looking at the game, but they may also be looking at some other players. So, and things, as we've seen with the referees, in slow motion and instant replay are a lot clearer than they are in real time. So in this case, you know, obviously it wasn't handled the way the league and the way the world would like to have it handled. But I'm sure, from what I understand, the league is taking action. They had a conference call with all the team physicians, with all the athletic trainers to go over this. And interesting, one of the things that came out of that, which nobody's talked about yet, is in the last minute or so, or the 2 minutes of the game, a medical timeout is charged to the team. So that plays, and that may be another rule change that they may have to consider with this. But what happens? The trainer runs out on the field, and what does the player say? What they always said, I'm straight, I'm good. I'm straight.
That's exactly what they probably say. I'm good.
And he might not have seen it, and they're under this last minute. So he makes a quick decision that the guy's talking, he seems okay, and he's saying okay, and without the benefit of this replay, and he runs off. And unfortunately, you know, the quarterback subsequently fumbles away the ability to win the game. That's the downside when these players don't give you the straight answer. So,
yeah, going forward here, when a player is in the concussion protocol, just give us like the 30-second capsule. What does that mean to a guy to be able? What does he have to do to get cleared to play the next game?
You know, and that comes up all the time. But what that means is, whatever the symptoms, if you're knocked out, you know, you're not going to be there the next week. But short of that, if you get your bell rung, if you're a little foggy, if your memory's off, if you have a headache, the first thing that has to happen is that symptom has to clear. And if the symptom doesn't clear by Wednesday or Thursday, you're not playing. But if the symptom's clear by Monday, you get a neuropsychological test. If you pass that, there's some kind of tests like you see policemen giving for DUIs. You got to pass that. And then after the Monday watch and film Tuesday rest, then on Wednesday you got to go out and exercise. If you have symptoms with exercise, you go back to the back again. If you have no symptoms, then you can progress on. And with a mild concussion, that's why we see some players able to play the next week, some not, because the symptoms persisted. That's the big difference.
All right. Well, hopefully for Zane Beatles to be able to be full go this weekend, and for Case Keenum, that he'll be the same way. All these guys, such a dangerous sport. DJ Fluker, the Chargers, he's got his fourth or fifth concussion in 3 years. He's back in the protocol. He was in it a couple weeks ago, got cleared. He's back in, so the Chargers may be without one of their starting linemen due to this exact issue. We got to run, but Dr. Stephen Lucy, we appreciate you stopping by every Wednesday, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Doc, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yeah, everybody have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you next week.
You got it, buddy. There he goes, Dr. Stephen Lucy from JOI. Tony, fan feedback spotlight today, asking folks, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, what are you most thankful for as a Jag fan? What do we get?
Here's what we got from Mike. That despite the last handful of years being rough, I have a team to love and root for. Go Jaguars. From Union Jack's Joe over there across the pond. Genuinely, thank you, Jacks-based fans, for lending us your team once a year. We love you for the sacrifice. From Colby, that we can talk about Jaguars and playoffs in the same sentence. From Daniel, I'm thankful for Dave Caldwell, that Blake Bortles is our quarterback, the Allens, and for Telvin Smith. From Alvaro, I'm thankful for 1010XL and Jaguars Today for the hard work you do keeping the long-distance fan up to date. From Eric, strictly as a fan, I'm thankful they are playing better and winning games. Also for you guys, this show. You're welcome, Eric. From Ravens Nevermore, I'm so thankful that Caldwell is our GM that I'm also thankful that Gene Smith is unemployed. From Teal-pocalypse, I'm thankful for having an NFL team in my hometown and one that's competitive in November. From Black Dog, thankful for all team peripherals, clubs, activities, great fans, excellent daily updates, coverage, and Jaguars Today. And from Irish Jaguar, simply, I'm thankful for Duval with the smiley face, and he just got back home over there a couple days ago. So, what's up over there, Stevie?
What's up? Here's a few quickly off the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Larry Venable said, I'm truly thankful that Shad Khan, Dave Caldwell, and Gus Bradley have made the Jags competitive again. Tony Bellucci said, I'm thankful for the offense this season. Chris Oler said, One word, con. Steve Muncy said, I'm thankful for an NFL franchise. Chad Cox said, Bortles isn't Gabbert, and that's what I'm thankful for. Leo said, I'm thankful that we have a team in Jacksonville to root for. Dustin Smith, I'm extremely thankful that we're not the Browns. And then finally, Derek Stewart said, he is thankful for Chad Henne's mustache, and it is glorious.
It's something else.
Is it not?
Well, he shaved it off.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah, yesterday. Big news.
Oh, that's sad. I did not realize that he shaved it off. Why did he shave it off? I thought you're supposed to grow it for the entire month of November. Not the case?
That's usually the case, yeah.
Huh.
No idea. Jaguars Twitter account tweeted it out yesterday. That's sad news.
That is sad news, and we'll pour one out for Chad Henne's mustache over the holiday weekend. I am thankful, from a Jaguar perspective, Tony, we get to work in this building every single day
no
and
doubt.
Talk about the National Football League and the Jags and interact with so many great people from this organization and the fan base, and it's a blast, man, and if the wins continue to come, it's going to make it that much more fun. So we all realize how fortunate we are to be in the position that we are in every single day. So that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor, for Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, for John Osier of Jaguars.com, for Dr. Stephen Lucy of JOI, and all of you out there. And we appreciate Tyler Devitt, Joe Fortunato. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're going to head over shortly to film your Jags Fantasy Football.
Yeah.
We're going to pretend it's the Thanksgiving Day games have already been played, as this will air on Saturday and Sunday, so that should make for an interesting watch. But check us out Saturday night at 11, Sunday morning at 11:30 on CW17 with your Jacks Fantasy Football. Thanks to those who submitted questions to us this week. If we didn't answer them on Twitter, we'll try to get to them on the show as well. XL Primetime coming up next. We'll say hello to the boys straight ahead on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!